Matthew chapter 24. You know, sometimes I talk to the Lord about the message, and I say, you know, I don't want people to think I'm in a rut. But when God just keeps bringing us back and bringing us back and bringing us back, it's there's no doubt that God has a line for us, a message for us, and I'm not one to buck God. 2 Peter chapter 3, you're not turning there, but I'm going to read it to you. Verse 3, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lusts. Are we there? And saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. Well, I'd argue that second point's not the case, but I understand the question or the doubt that might be raised by some. Because we talk about the rapture, the rapture, the rapture. I can remember times in my life specifically. I can remember a time when I was about 19 years old saying, the Lord's coming back. You know, he's coming back soon. And that's been a minute ago. And I can remember 25, 26 years ago, just really feeling that God has got, he's coming back soon. And here we are. So, you know, we go through those phases of really feeling that intensity of his promise that he is coming back. And so we go to the words of Jesus tonight in Matthew chapter 24, understanding that he was crucified in 33 AD, understanding that when he was crucified, it's been a while. He said, you know, there are some things that are about to happen. We know that Jerusalem, that Israel was conquered and overwhelmed in 70 AD. And so we know that there are some points along the way. And so we might say, well, why did he say it was coming soon and it didn't happen yet? And then we go to that verse, a day with the Lord is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is one day. We look at all creation and we see where we are from the beginning of creation to now. And we see that span of time. And some might argue that we've just about completed the week of creation, or the week of what God created. In thousands of years. And we're getting close. We look to the words of Jesus in Matthew 24, verse 1. Jesus went out and departed from the temple. His disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. It's very impressive. We know about the initial building of the temple. We know about, you know, the tabernacle and then the temple and then the rebuilt temple. And then in this period of time, King Herod had actually gone to Mount Zion and had kind of leveled the top of it and expanded the temple, if you will, or at least the temple mount, the temple grounds. And so it was quite vast and quite impressive. And the apostles were very impressed by that. They wanted Jesus to see it, showing it to him, you know, because he's from Galilee. That's like being from Pahokee. And you need to see the big town, Jerusalem. Verse 2, Jesus said, see ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And if you look, and these stones that he's talking about are massive. And it's the way that they move them from the limestone pits to that place still boggles the mind without the technology and the machinery that we have today. And yet they did and numbered them. Remember that those stones were cut and they were fit so that once they got to the temple site, there would not be the sound of a hammer at the temple. It all just fit, had to fit exactly together. That was God's plan. And so it was. And Jesus talks about these massive stones and he said there won't be one on top of the other. And we could go there today and look all around the temple grounds, if you will, and there are stones that have been toppled over the years, and yet those massive stones remain intact. But Jesus said there won't be one on another. As he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be? What shall be the sign of thy coming? Isn't that interesting? The sign of thy coming. And then this, and of the end of the world. We're looking at three things, aren't we? looking at different periods. And so the following chapter, this all these verses, they don't tell of one event, they tell of other of several events. And so we put it in context and where we are today. Verse 4, Jesus said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. Many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. It's sad to me that people would get into church, call it a church, and use it for their own purpose. Paul warned us that would happen. Jesus warned us that would happen. To deceive people, to fulfill their own desires, to gratify themselves and their ego, their pride, they would deceive many. Verse 6, ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. Now, if we go all the way back to that period and look at all of the wars that have happened since then in that region and then beyond and then the whole world, and the battle that still rages in Israel tonight, they never feel safe. They have the defense system in place. But at the same time, at any moment, the horns go off and the missiles fly. And it's always dangerous in Israel. And there are walls built. You go and tour and they'll show you holes in the wall where people, snipers across on the next hill, will just shoot at Jerusalem for no reason. No reason except they just hate the Jews. And he said, but the end is not yet. Nation shall rise against nation. Kingdom against kingdom. Again, we look at the possibility of war. We see now what's going on in the world, but it's always the discussion, the rumblings that we have to be mindful of. Because there are, it seems like there's always a rumble of war. And famines and pestilence. Isn't it incredible that we still have famines today? Can you imagine? There are people in the world. I mean, to me, and I know that it's first world thinking, but to me, you just don't stay there. You find a way to get out. You find another place to go, or you bring the technology in to grow. You know, we can revive deserts into forests by planting trees and such as that, vegetation. And you say, but you got to have rain. But you start on the edge and you work your way out, and it happens. It's happened all around the world, and yet there are still places where there are famines. And if you think about the places where there are wars going on, we could see the hunger. On the way here tonight, someone called, just a random person picked up the number from the internet probably and called asking for financial help. There are troubles. People are hungry. People are in need all around the world. Again, here we are at this point. Should we really be in that situation at this point? We wouldn't think so. Pestilences. We've just experienced the virus all around the world. Still lots of discussion about that. It's just one. You know, the reality is we talked about all these prayer needs and none of it was that. But, you know, sickness, people still had other sicknesses and they continue to have other sicknesses and there's lots of stuff going on. Earthquakes in diverse places. And pay attention and look that up, and you'll find they're everywhere, all around. We don't feel them here. We don't have many here. Very rare that we have one here, but, you know, it could happen. It could happen. Verse 9, they shall deliver you up to be afflicted. Jesus was telling the apostles, because they came to him privately, again, this is the inside group, insider information. He said, they will afflict you. You know, we have this idea that once we get saved and if we serve God, we shouldn't have trouble. And yet he says, they will afflict you. You will have trouble. But we ought to be able to get along with everybody and everybody ought to love us because we love Jesus. That's not the case. There are people who will hate us. I was being kind to a neighbor not long ago, and I don't know that it was intentional, but the shirt that she wore when she came out to greet me, was in my face, if you understand what I mean. It was equality or something like that, rainbow colors, just, you know, pushing the homosexual agenda. Was it intentional or is that just a shirt she was wearing? I don't know. But, you know, I think people do it just to see what reaction. By the way, no reaction. No reaction from me. Except now I'm telling you. But people do things just to provoke you, just to be in your face. They shall afflict you, and then he says in verse 9, and shall kill you. And we look at that and we think, how could Jesus expect us to go into ministry to the extent that we are killed in ministry? Will someone please explain to me what happens to you when you die? I mean, I'm changing my address. You can't forward the mail, but I'm changing my address. I'm going to heaven. I'm not going to have any burdens or problems or worries anymore. I'm going to be at peace and joy and love and fellowship with God and His presence, and what the music I'll hear and the singing I'll hear and the people I'll reunite with and love them. He said they're going to kill you. And we look at it from this side and we say, oh no, that's terrible. Christians have to have, we have to embrace the idea that we step from here to there. What a wonderful time. Friend texted me today, said, I don't know if you know, but my husband passed away. And I said, you know, I had to word it right because you got to be careful about those things. But I said, yes, I know he's with the Lord. And he is, no doubt about that. Not long after that, someone called and told me another friend of mine had passed away on Sunday. And I know she's with the Lord. Her husband passed away within the last 12 months, I think. And guess what? They're both with the Lord. And so death is not, it shouldn't shudder us like it does others. We are not, as Paul said, without hope. We are not without hope. And ye shall be hated of all nations. Now, I don't like that, do you? I don't want to be hated. I don't want anybody to hate me, but he said, it's going to happen. You know, this idea that we've got to somehow accommodate the world with our message so that they won't hate us. We have people that are coming to church now because their local Baptist church, it was Baptist from the beginning, decided they weren't going to be Baptist anymore because people don't like the word Baptist. Jesus said they're going to hate you. What do you want to call us? The universal church of the ungodly? And by the way, we accept everybody. We allow anybody to come in here. We want everybody to get saved. We don't push anybody out. We want everybody to know Jesus. Now, obviously, we can't accept everybody into the church. You got to repent. You got to be baptized. You got to get saved. That's expected. That's the requirement. But if the church just embraces what the world embraces so we can be accepted by the world, then I guarantee you this, you won't be hated. And Jesus told his church you'd be hated. By the way, I'm not out to be hated. I'm not trying to be hated. I'm just preaching the gospel, just preaching the Bible. And if that causes you to hate me, you're lost. Really? Guys, we cannot be friends with the world and accept and endorse and approve of sin just because culture has changed and the social expectations have changed. We've got to take a stand against it. All of it. All of it. The ones you don't like and the ones you embrace. If it's sin, it's wrong. You should be hated of all nations for my name's sake. He wasn't talking about Israel. He wasn't talking about Jerusalem. He was talking about the church. For my name's sake. And so if a church begins to embrace all of the things of the world and all of the sin and incorporate that and attract that and become an entertainment venue instead of a church, they probably won't be hated because they're no longer serving God's sake, His name's sake. By the way, I'm not opposed to entertain. I'm not opposed to just broadening our music, I'm not opposed to that. But what I am opposed to is turning it into a show. It's supposed to be worship. It's supposed to draw us to God. It's supposed to captivate our spirit. It's not a show. And he says, in verse 10, many shall be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. As I read this, I just kept thinking, he's describing today. He's describing today. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many today. And because iniquity or sin shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The compassion. Doesn't it seem like people have lost their compassion? They've lost their empathy and their sympathy and their ability to love and their ability to cry, to shed a tear over the heartaches and the burdens of others. He says, because their love is frozen, because sin is so prevalent. Verse 13, he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. He said, guys, just keep going. Just keep going. There's going to come a rescue. There's going to be a rescue. You're going to get out of it. There's light at the end of the tunnel. He wasn't saying that's the only way to get saved. What he was saying is there's going to come a time when it's going to end. The heartache, the trouble, the burden, it's going to end. Remember that phrase, this too shall pass. It's a great day. Bad news for you, this too shall pass. It's a bad day. Good news for you, this too shall pass. Whatever it is, it's temporary. But Jesus says, just keep going, just endure it, just hang on. You're going to be saved. It's going to be okay in the end. Verse 14, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Guys, again, how close are we? It's being translated into other languages. People embed themselves in villages so they can learn their language and even have to develop writing that goes along with the verbal language because they don't have writing in some of these places. But they develop writing. They develop an alphabet. They develop words. And they put it on paper so that they can provide a Bible, so they can provide a gospel. But they learn their language and they develop the ability, at least verbally, to give them the gospel all around the world. It's getting there. Step by step, every opportunity to translate it to a new language or to reach a new dialect, a new group of people. Engage it. Get it spread. But I'm telling you, it's happening. It's happening all around. Verse 21. Then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. The great tribulation that he speaks of is a moment in history. It's years in history, but it's that period in history. And it'll never be like it again, and it'll never be like it before. We can moan and complain and commiserate and be miserable and fuss about how bad our lives are. Guys, life is fantastic right now. We look at what we've got. We should say how blessed we are. Oh, we're so blessed. We're so blessed. God's been so good to us. Just by letting us be born in this country, wasn't that a wonderful lottery win for us? By God's design, but what a blessing. Verse 22. Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. Except those days should be shortened. What are we talking about? Again, we're talking about tribulation. We're talking about fire. We're talking about pollution. We're talking about pestilence. We're talking about hate and murder and war. We're talking about people even to the point they want to die but can't. Calling for the rocks to fall on them so they can die. Verse 23, if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. We know that, right? We know that Jesus is, when he comes the next time, he's coming in the air. He's not coming to the floor. He's not coming to the earth. He's coming in the air. He's calling us home. We know that. There shall arise false Christs, false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders. That's the thing. You know, people say, oh, but look at what he can do. Look at his power. Look at his signs and wonders. Jesus told us that was going to happen. Again, don't let it rattle you. Insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I've told you before. Wherefore, if they shall say to you, behold, he's in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he's in a secret chamber. Believe it not. Don't get sidetracked with these declarations. When he comes, he's coming in the air. Look at verse 35. But of that day and hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. He's got a private calendar book, doesn't he? A date timer, as we used to call them. He's got it marked. Any of you have a retirement clock before you retired? Was counting down? I wonder if he's got one of those he could just look over. Nobody else could see it, though. Counting down. Nobody knows, verse 37, but as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. As in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking. Now, that doesn't just mean having supper. That means they were indulging. They were gluttonous. And they were marrying and giving in marriage. He said it would still be happening. Still be happening. Until the day that Noah entered into the ark. A message. 120 years, the message. Hey, listen, there's going to come a flood and we all got to escape by trusting in God. Having a wedding, having a party. You know what he's saying? They were living their lives like there was nothing to be concerned about. And the whole world is doing that. But the church cannot afford to do that. We've got to be mindful that at any moment, that trumpet could sound in the sky part and we are called out of here. And not just we would be called out, but those that we reach for Christ will be caught up too. And those we don't reach for Christ will be here to endure, to face the tribulation, to live in all that's going to happen. They were just living their lives. Nothing to be concerned about. Nothing to see here. On Sunday, you know, it's incredible to me how many members of the church that we have on Sunday morning that are not at God's house on Sunday morning. Not talking about vacations, not talking about a couple of days a year. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about on the regular. It's rare that they come to church. Coming to church is the exception instead of taking the day off. God's people. And some with children. And their children are going to grow up thinking that church is not important. God is not important and doesn't really matter. It must not really matter because we never find time for God. Well, just like nothing's going to happen. Just another day. They knew not until the flood came and took them all away. Verse 39, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. There shall two be in the field. One shall be taken and the other left. What a sad thing, huh? And I don't know about you, but if I'm the one that's left behind, I'm wondering, why didn't he tell me? Why didn't he tell me about Jesus? Two women shall be grinding at the mill. Verse 41, one taken, the other left. Why didn't she say anything? We work right here together all this time, and she never told me about Jesus, never told me to flee from the wrath to come, never told me the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Watch therefore, verse 42, for you know not in what hour your Lord doth come. Verse 44. Therefore be ye also ready, For in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. Verse 35. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. I want you to understand the importance of the S at the end of that word. My words. Every word in the book is true. And it's relevant and it's valuable, not just for us, but we've got to share the message because he's coming back and he's coming back soon. Are you ready? Let's stand. We'll practice going up by getting up. No more knee pain, no more doctor's appointments. Won't that be great? You say, what am I going to do with all eternity if I won't have any doctor's appointments? God, we love you so much. Thank you for your word. Build us up, strengthen us, challenge us. God, stir our hearts and minds. Give us understanding of each opportunity we have to share the gospel, to share that hope that is in us. Dismiss us with your grace. Forgive us our sins. In Jesus' name, amen.